CliffCentral.com.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
The Threaded Exchange with CRB Ealing. Live on Cliff Central.
Yes, yes, yes. Ses fikile. We are back in the house, Lisa.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
I'm good. Oh, I have a shout out to Simpiwe. She said I must give her a shout out.
Straight off the bat.
And then I think it's a good time to also propose that she should be my wife.
Oh, my goodness. Look at her.
Simpiwe, I still need a Valentine.
Oh, Simpiwe, look at you, girl.
How are you doing, Lisa? We're back at it with the Threaded Exchange. I think this is our third installment.
Yes, it is the third one.
And I can't still believe they let us have a radio show. Like, that's crazy.
Number three, you really still can't believe it. How do you feel about number three so far?
I feel really good. I just think it's going to go up from here. I mean, I think last week we were talking about residual pussy. The week before we were discussing people who don't belong in the fashion industry.
And then my mom asked me what residual pussy was.
What did you tell her? Residual pussy? How would
I said,
you describe it?
I don't
it?
Know. I said, I don't know. That's why.
Oh, wait,
got
you'll get residual
fishes.
Dick. Yours will be different, your perspective.
Yeah.
Because you know me, you're going to get residual dick. I make you look good on the streets.
Yeah.
I think.
Okay.
I'd like to think so. Yeah, and this week we're going to be talking people who are sellouts, you know? People that, you know, go around telling us they're selling Africa or represent what Africa is all about. But in fact, they're not. They're selling European culture without actually knowing about it. So today in studio, we've got Ulatu Manqokolo. He's the creative director and founder of Matxhosa, a clothing line that is driven by the Xhosa culture and is doing well overseas. You can get his stuff in Japan. You can buy stuff in Hong Kong. You can get his stuff in New York City. And he's become such a, you know, a pillar of the design industry and really representing and taking Africa to the world. And there's other designers and other creatives who are frolicking around who claim to be selling Africa or represent Africa. So today we're going to be digging deeper into that. You know, what does it mean to be Africa? Just because you wear prints and they catch you in the New York Times, does it mean that's the image of Africa? What is the image of Africa? You know, so I think we're going to dive
in. What do you
deeper.
Think the image of Africa is?
I think Africa doesn't have an image.
All right.
I think, you know, we have such, I mean, just looking at South Africa alone, we have 11 different languages. We have 11 different cultures that are so different, so vast from each other. To have one image of what Africa or South Africa represents, that's a lie. Why are you lying to people? So I don't think, you know, being African is one image. I think you are African. I think I'm African. I think the guys in the room are also African, but we are all so different. We all live differently. And yeah, the narrative of what being African actually means is it should change, because now, you know, we look at Vogue Italia that does African inspired covers and it's literally just people wearing print. And I'm like, I don't wear print.
So wait, you have a problem with print as a representation of Africa?
I have a problem with the type of print. You know, okay. Like the Ankara print is actually German, but it's been frolicked as African. So I don't understand how that happened. But you look at Amandebele, you know, that print, that is African. Because Amandebele communicates.
We've dived right into it.
Yeah, because Amandebele, you know, communicate a strong message through their print. You know, each house is printed differently and that stands for something. You know, Amaxhosa, insimbi zethu, you know, the types of colors they are, the types of prints we have on them, that stands and means something. It's not random. Mm. Whereas Ankara prints, what does it mean?
It means Kotini. I don't know.
You see what I'm saying?
So, it means swag.
You know, and the thing is, we need to become more sensitive to that, because, you know, a lot of, not just us, but a lot of younger guys that are coming up after us are really, you know, consuming all this whole Africa thing. And it's very important that we're honest in the message that we send, and also that we are authentic in what we say. Ankara is not African, guys. It's German. So you can't, yeah, we can't lead into that kind of stuff. Lisa, yes. How's your week looking? What are we up to this week? What are we doing? What does this week has in store for you?
I feel, can you hear me?
What are you doing?
I mean, like,
I think, what are you flirting with the guy in the office? What's going on?
I'm not flirting. He's actually trying to be helpful.
Yeah.
I have, all right, don't worry about it. So, Laduma is here.
Is he here?
He is here.
Laduma must come in. Why is he late? Why is he late? Guys, can you get Laduma in here? Apparently he's here. Am I wrong? No, he's not here yet.
Really?
Yeah, unless did you
yeah,
see him?
Yes. I see the print coming in. He's wearing a beautiful jersey, matching the beautiful weather.
Yeah. You know what I was actually stressed about? I was stressed about the fact, you know, Lisa, I don't enjoy talking to you.
Why?
Because I talk to you almost every single day. You work with me in my company, and now I have to sit here on a Monday and
well,
talk to you. I'm like,
well, here's Laduma. Let's
I'm like,
talk
where,
to him.
Where's Laduma? Yeah.
How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Good, thank you.
Let me get your mic on. There we go. You're live.
Yeah, brother.
How are you doing, my man?
Fantastic, man. And you?
I'm good. It's so crazy. Like, for me to be able to get a hold of you, I need to invite you to an interview. Otherwise, when I call out to my, yo, my brother, let's link up, or when's the new stuff dropping, I'll never hear from him. He doesn't respond.
Same as you.
You tell him too busy,
no,
man.
No, I do respond. I'm not that bad. You're worse.
Nah, WhatsApp is the way to go these days.
Okay, right. So guys, this is a public service announcement. If you want to get a hold of Laduma, or if you sent him an email and he hasn't responded to it, please WhatsApp him, rather.
Yeah. Tell them you're out changing the world. Get back.
But how are you doing, Butuan?
I'm fresh and fed to renewing thoughts, going to a new season, new winter, South African winter. I think it's going to be a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really excited that you're here. Thank you so much for gracing us with your presence. I'm warning you, this is unlike any interview you've ever done before.
For sure.
We're gonna talk about your journey. That's important.
Yeah.
Most importantly, we're gonna talk about, you know, I don't see you as just a designer. I think when people say you're a designer, that's great, but it also undermines that you're an entrepreneur, actually. You run a business. So Makosa is a business. And today I actually wanna dive into your entrepreneurial side. You know, how do you balance your creativity and running a business, and what are the challenges of taking your business global?
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to be talking about today, right after this.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
The Threaded Exchange with CRB. Live on Cliff Central.
So this is live online?
It's live right now. Oh. We are live across Africa, across the whole entire world. The message is strong. Guys, we are live with Laduma Ngqokolo. If you want to WhatsApp us, please, this is our deet, 079-784-2090. As I said before, we've got Laduma Ngqokolo, who is the founder and the creative director of Maxhosa, a clothing line that is inspired by the Xhosa culture and really taking over the world right now. I've got Laduma in studio. We're going to talk a bit about his journey, but most importantly, talk about him as an entrepreneur. What does it take to take your brand global? I mean, we've seen designers like David Tlale showcase in New York Fashion Week, but they haven't done it like this. So what is the formula for a guy like Laduma that he's taking his brand so global so quickly as well? I mean, I remember 4 years ago, he was showing for the first time at Johannesburg Fashion Week. Do you remember that?
I remember very clear. 2014.
Yeah.
Wow, so that's a
the Joburg Fashion Week.
Yeah. And do you remember me? I was like, I was still in first year at Lifestyle, thinking I would, you know, conquer the world and take over with this company called Threaded Man. Just remember that.
I still remember very well. But I think your presence didn't show that you were a student back then. I remember when I met you with one of your friends. After that gig.
Yeah.
And then you told me that you're Xhosa and you love what I do. And I was like, wow. And you were one of the first people that I met in Joburg, because I was fairly new here. I used to live in Cape Town.
Yeah. Can I tell you, actually, just diving into your journey, I remember when I came across your brand, I think I was in grade 9 or 10.
Yeah.
And I think, because I used to follow Siyabonga Gaza at that time, and I remember he had a Facebook page, and he was sharing, I think, Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University's page of some guy called Laduma, who had done a knit, some knit thing for his class, and it was called Maxhosa, and it had print on it.
Yeah.
That's the guy I remember.
Mm.
How did you get into this?
Actually, I was fortunate enough to be invited to speak at the Design Indaba festival.
Flex.
In Cape Town.
Flex.
In 2011. That was like 2 months after I graduated at NMMU. I spoke to an audience of about 3,000 people. I haven't started my business back then and never had fashion experience. And so I had a demand before I started the business. And that is where I got the exposure from international media.
Yeah.
That was the concept base and the footprint that I got. And people like Sabo Nwegazi and various other people that I looked up to started noticing what I do and started contacting me. Hence, you saw that. And I also got... My story was picked up by the South African high school curriculum. So the young kids in high school study about it as well.
Oh, wow.
So some of the
kids in school study about you.
That's brilliant.
That's crazy.
Some of the kids that I meet, they say they love what I do. And I ask them, how do you know? They study about it at school. And I love the fact that they have in-depth knowledge about it.
Yeah. But how did you mean... How did you start? I mean, what was the moment like when you realized that this is what you could do? Like, did you sit there and be like, oh, I could take this jersey and make it into a brand, or I could do this print? What was it that gave you this idea, or what inspired this idea? I know it's inspired by your culture.
Yeah.
But specifically, what exactly in your culture that sparked this thought into what the brand is today?
The initial concept, as you know, started as... a concept that was targeted to Xhosa initiates in Eastern Cape. As you know, us as Xhosa people, when we are aged 18 to 25, we have to go through manhood circumcision. And one, before they go through that process, you have to get rid of all of old clothes. As someone who studied textile design and technology at Lawson Brown High School, as a person that appreciates fashion and high quality products, I felt that I didn't really feel comfortable in those type of clothes, and I thought, let me come up with something that that resonates with me as a designer that I think other people love as well. And so I went to a museum with tons of beadwork from the 1800s and the early 19th century, got some material there, translated that into modern aesthetic that I thought that would be appealing to you.
Yeah.
Myself and various other Xhosa initiates.
Yeah.
But then when I knitted the jerseys, I grew up making jerseys from age 16. And when I knitted the jerseys, and I never used to make jerseys with patterns back then.
Yeah.
So
is it the old knit with like umakulu, where umakulu ako shows?
Nah, not that primitive method.
That's the only thing I was taught. I remember we used to make us sew scarves in school.
Yeah, there's a domestic mechanic method where you buy a small machine and then punch in a pattern and then have to push the carriage left and right. So it's quite a physically draining process, but you get beautiful.
Is that why you're so thin? No, I was just a question. I mean, as an athlete, if you're a runner and you run long distance, you're gonna be thinner. And this also needs,
Steve Jobs was thin as well.
Yeah, but so, I mean, he was sick.
Yeah,
but I mean, I'm not saying yes.
Was stop.
I don't think I should give you the show.
Latuma, please but continue now, with that one.
Are you still using the same method?
I'm going back to that method now.
Why?
Because I had so much demand of my products, I had to outsource production.
Oh, yes.
And that made things easy for me because I could focus on design and get the brand to have a distinctive aesthetic that people can recognize and focus more on that. But now I've established that I'm going back to making them by hand so that I can, like, sell them to a super niche market.
And the quality is great.
And I mean, also just building the muscle from the machine, just looking great, is not a bad idea either. So I think that's pretty cool.
No, I don't know what Hensia is hinting at you.
But also, I mean, having an idea is not enough, and having a concept and building something is not enough. Diving into you being an entrepreneur, in the beginning, wasn't money a struggle for you in order to do this? In terms of this, I remember your first collection was so rich. The material itself just weighed so heavy.
True.
I mean, as a young black entrepreneur, I remember when I started The Threaded Man, I struggled a lot with money. And that was a thing that was, even designers, we have a lot of broke designers in this country. I mean, Instagram doesn't say that, but we have a lot of broke designers. So early on, what did you do different to make sure your company could become sustainable?
As you know, our political circumstance placed us in a position which we didn't have power over. As a young black entrepreneur, you grow up in a society where you work with limited resources. I grew up with both parents are not around at home. So I had to go out there and hustle for money. Mm. I went to the NYDAs, the CEDARs, and various government agencies to look for immediate funding, but I couldn't get help. And as a graduate, as an academic, I went back to my university, told them that I've got a concept that is commercially, that has commercial viable. And they quickly started up a program which they called the NMMU Art and Design Incubator. I was the first incubatee. That was like in 2011. So they gave me a seed capital of about 100K. You know, when you're young, and
don't tell me you put that money on bottles now. What are you? Why you have a naughty face?
Didn't.
Yeah. You look like, yo, went down, Baba.
I'm not that type of guy. So basically,
are you not that type of guy?
Nah. So what I basically did was they gave me resources like mentorship, where I learned about finance, how to handle finance, about how to outsource production, how to handle a business. So I got that value on top of the 100K, and we invested that into infrastructure. So I got 5 people, trained them how to make knitwear, bought machines. Unfortunately, Port Elizabeth wasn't viable enough for that type of business.
Yeah.
And the program was a 2-year contract. So they gave me premises as well. And so I got to learn a lot in a space of 2 years. And after 2 years, I realized that, yo, I'm now done with the incubator. I want to move to Cape Town and further my business.
Yeah.
And they let me off and hosted other incubatees, which are still benefiting from that today.
That's really nice.
That's incredible. And I mean, since then, your show at Fashion Week, and you blew up, you know, and the next thing I see you popping up in London, and you're taking all around the world. Now, one of the trickiest things in South Africa when it comes to designers is that they don't know how to take their brand global. Even as an entrepreneur, you know, we don't know how to take our brands global.
Mm.
And there's something very special about your brand, because your brand has gone global and quite well.
Yeah.
And it's even sold. I remember seeing a Matosa Nerd selling at the same price of a high-end designer clothing line.
Mm.
You know, I'm like, oh my word, like this brand is on the
seeing
same level. Seeing it in the same spaces.
Platform,
places where, you know, you find Dolce & Gabbana, you find Tom Ford, you find Matosa.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, you know, with this talk today, that's what I want to dive into more. Going international.
Yeah.
How did that happen? I know you went to study in London.
Yeah.
So I would trace it starting there, number one.
Mm.
But how would you tell that story of how you went abroad?
Actually, while I was studying at NMU, I entered a design competition, which was called Society of Dyers and Colorists. It was a global design competition. I represented South Africa because I won the South African leg, went there, competed against a finalist from China, Australia, Pakistan, India. Yeah. And
was this your first time going overseas?
First time going overseas.
What country was this?
It was London.
You went to London for the first time.
Yeah.
What? How old were you at this time?
I was about 22.
22 years old.
First time in a plane, first time in a hotel.
First time in a plane. How did that feel?
True story, B. It was overwhelming, man, because I was alone and without someone, with a map on my hand, and I landed in Heathrow. Had to catch a Piccadilly line, asked around about the Piccadilly line. No one knew about it, but I had to switch up my accent a bit and be like, Piccadilly line. Got it, dropped in the hotel. It was an amazing experience, and I spent 10 days as well to explore the city and learn the market. And I went to all the high-end stores that I used to learn about on magazines. At that time, I never been to Joburg or Cape Town.
Wait, Jesus. So you from the you've
straight
only
from
grown
the
up
windy
in,
city,
you
to grew Cape Town,
yeah, like
and then to London.
No, he had never been to Cape Town.
I've never been to Cape Town.
So you from PE, never been anywhere else in Africa or anywhere. You went to London.
Yeah, straight to London, and took part in that competition, and I won the first prize. They gave me a Global Design Award and £1,000. And the university gave me money to spend as well. So you can imagine.
You're balling.
A crazy moment that I had that week. And so I took that £1,000 and bought a more advanced machine, which I used to advance my product. and use that product as a pitch to university. So that was my like first global footprint where I got a couple of people that wanted to buy my products. And I realized that it's possible to design and create something that's globally credible, but focus locally as well.
Mm. Yeah. When you went to London and you're seeing, I mean, all these incredible, rich, luxury stores, you know, what made you think that your brand can compete on the same level?
I must commend university where I studied. My lecturer used to live in London. Was part of the punk era with the young kids out in London. So he understood levels that one has to reach in order to be able to sell their products there. So they taught us very well that this is not good enough. Only your best is good enough. And I had a knitwear design mentor who apparently taught my mother how to make knitwear back in the 80s. And I met her at university, like maybe about 5 years after my mother passed away. She became my mentor, and she was a famous designer actually back in the apartheid era.
Yeah,
she traveled to Paris, Milan, everywhere, and did a lot of shows. So that mentorship was very important for me because it gave me an idea that I am one of a billion people out there that is consciously aware about knitwear. Knitwear is super difficult, by the way. That's why you don't see a lot of designers doing it in Africa. Because we start from raw material to finished product.
Yeah. And I mean, you do so many designs and so many prints and so many different colors. I can't imagine how technical that must be, especially when you're designing a collection and now that you've designed it, now you have to do it and make it. I can't imagine that process, what that must be like.
Yeah, it is a process that is beyond design, because you have to think about who's going to wear it and how it's going to sell, how it's going to move in stores, and the practicality of the piece as well. So for me, when I initially started as a young designer, I didn't have some of that background knowledge. Now I have it, and it makes the designing process even more complex.
Yeah.
But once you have a signature and you've secured a method, the key is just to repeat that process over and over.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've got it on the nail. Like, the fabric feels beautiful.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's rich and it's luxe. And he knows how much I wear his clothing. It's actually crazy.
You feel royal, like luxe.
I feel like a king when I wear your stuff. And now, in going back to your story about going international, now you went to the London International School of Design. What school did you go to in London?
I went to Central St. Martin's.
Central St. Martin's. Oh, let me not even take you there. I went to Central St. Martin's. Let me mind you, Central St. Martin's is the same school where the great Alexander McQueen went to school, right?
Alexander McQueen, Stella McCartney, John Galliano.
There we go.
La Tumangogo. So tell us, how did that happen?
I actually met one of the lecturers at the design in Daba in 2012. She was a fellow speaker as well, so we spoke at the same conference, and we had a conversation. I told her that, you know, one of my dreams was to study at one of the best design universities in the world, and she said, yo, sure, send me your CV and I'll consider, and we'll give you a scholarship for accommodation and food. I was like, I sent it through.
Yeah.
And it was approved. I got, they had two finalists, one from the UK and an international applicant as well. So I got the international one, and I hustled the visa for the whole year until I finally got it.
How was that experience like? I mean, being, you know, going from being in the rainy PE, you know, building this net from your hands, and now you're one of the best schools in the world in terms of design, Central St. Martin's.
Yeah.
How could you describe that experience to us, and how did that learning experience gonna influence what we're about to see for your next collection?
Yeah, it was an epic experience actually. I was there for about 2 years. I got to learn about diversity of a culture. Mm. As you know, London has all sorts of mixes that you can find in the world, from Asians to South Americans. I was in the same class with like students that are from like different parts of the world. So I got to learn from them about what's going on around the world.
Yeah.
And also the design application and method that they use in that school is just super amazing. No wonder, like they create successful graduates. They don't focus much on business. They have specialists that specialize in design and just dope ideas that like change the world. I did actually a master's in material futures, which is a different approach to fashion design. I didn't choose knitwear design because I already established in that. Yeah. Immaterial future is a course which looks at like trends for the next 20 years or next 50 years.
Wow.
So what we did there, like you come up with ideas, like for instance, you just think of a crazy idea. Like, for instance, in Japan, in the next 50 years, they want to build an escalator or a lift that goes to the moon. So that type of luxury is not something that we see nowadays.
Yeah.
But 50 years from now, no one, when it happens, no one would imagine that it would happen. So I took that knowledge into much closer context where I have to imagine what it would be in 2030 or 2025.
Wow.
Because I think environment will change then.
It's something that I always say, actually, and it's something that you touched on, is that also coming from the Eastern Cape and growing up in a disadvantaged family due to an oppressive system that we used to have, is that as Black young creatives or as Black young children, we don't actually even know we're creatives because we never have that luxury to be creative. It's always like, you need to be a doctor, you need to be a policeman, you need to be a teacher. You know, it's about, you know, working, earning your money and supporting the family. That's what it's about. And then getting married, getting kids, and you just fall into the cycle that just never progresses beyond what it knows. So to tap out of that and be at a school now where you can go crazy, you know, money is not a problem, nothing is a problem, can create much closer the way you want to see it. That must be such an intense and also quite a liberating experience.
Yeah, it was a liberating one. That was the whole point for me. I wanted to go abroad, liberate and think big. Yeah. Because I felt that as designers in Africa, we're not thinking big enough. Like the kids that I was amongst have some of the craziest ideas where I felt that, you know, I needed to switch up my way of thinking so that I can fit in within their wave of thinking. But I decided that let me come back and apply that knowledge locally back at home, because I think there's a lot of us that need that information. To take our industry to the next level.
Wow, that's so incredible.
And
we are now halfway through our show. I think what we're going to do is for the second half of the show, we're going to get a bit controversial.
Yeah.
Not controversial. I mean, I won't put you into trouble, Latuma, but I think we actually need to talk more about Africa, you know, because of Instagram and social media, creatives like us. Mm. You know, Africa is becoming, you know, a country, you know, a continent that everyone is watching out for.
Yeah.
You know, Africa is the future. We hear it all the time. We hear that, you know, the future is African and female. We hear all these things about Africa in terms of fashion forefront. You know, many people in the industry are being dubbed as the faces of African fashion. You know, so I want to dive into what does that actually mean? You know, and I want to get a perspective from your eyes. What does Africa look like? Do you believe in Africa, number one? And find out, you know, your thoughts on that, being a thought leader and being an African that is celebrated globally. I want to get more of those insights. So let me give you a bit of a breathing break and a thinking break.
Yeah.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for. The Threaded Exchange with CMB. Live on Cliff Central.
Welcome back to the Threaded Exchange.
Your breathing
I gave him exactly 10 seconds to breathe, but not at all. I mean, this show is about positive energy. It's not about being shady. It's about, you know, uplifting Black creatives. You know, there's a lot of us who are in disadvantaged backgrounds, or some of us who are struggling with our dreams, and we want to make it happen. And this show is about inspiring you, you know, to show you and tell these different stories from incredible Africans who can really, really inspire you so that one day you're also sitting here and telling your story. That's what this show is about. And that's why we're calling it the Thread Exchange. It's cultured, it's progressive, and it's brave. And I believe that all our audience, all the people and the guests that we have on the show truly, truly represent that.
True.
And I think from my perspective, I think that's what the future of Africa lies in, people like Latuma. Latuma, before I give you a breathing break, we were talking about, you know, your journey, about Matosa starting at NMMU, where they gave you your seed funding to start your brand. You went global, you went to the London, Central St. Martins, I'm sorry, you know, where you spent 2 years there building your brand. And now you are probably, in my eyes, the best designer in our country.
Yeah,
you know, you brand that is celebrated that. Globally, and you've taken your brand internationally in such a unique and incredible way, which I've never seen it before. Done before because, you know, what we've seen from the past, not becoming spicy or anything.
You've become a South African export.
Yeah, we used to think that's David Lale. There was a time where David Lale was seen as a South African export. You know, there was a time where David Lale was seen as being African, even though I disagreed at the time.
Getting controversial.
No, it's the truth. No, it's the truth. I mean, I have to be honest. And I remember, you know, his way of going global was going to New York Fashion Week. It was a big deal. I still remember. It was like, you know, Africa Fashion International. Everyone was going on. The government was like, oh my God. Everyone was so happy that he was going international, but I haven't seen his clothes anywhere overseas. There hasn't been any retailer that I know of that carries David Lale.
True.
But you didn't do that. But I see your clothing all around the world.
Everywhere.
If I'm in Japan or I'm in a boutique that I wouldn't even know that sells Hermes bags, there's my clothes.
And the thing, like, it's so
crazy.
Distinct,
it's so distinct. Yeah. Like, your brand stands out. So, I mean, dude, how did that happen? Like, tell us what goes into taking your brand internationally, and how did you do it so different?
There's a guy, a motivational speaker that I was watching recently. He said something very important. He said that ideas are ish, execution is the game.
Mm.
So I like to focus more on the execution, man, because it's not the idea that's going to get the product where it needs to be. It's not the idea that's going to place the product where it needs to be. It's the way that you execute it. My first footprint was Merchants on Long, owned by Hanelle Rupert. And of course, in the industry...
Did you hear that? Rupert. I'm just putting it... Rupert. Google Rupert.
I'm trying to make a point that it is good to be connected in the industry. And some people, some people are looking for credible product to sell to, without mentioning a word. Yeah. So Hanelle, Merchants on Long has been one of those stores that wasn't afraid to place 500 units of my pieces.
Wow.
And take some of those pieces to London and go and do a pop-up there. And then we went to Paris last year and did a pop-up in Paris.
Yeah.
So that is some of the execution methods that I use. Just having a connection with just one store that has a gateway to other avenues,
yes.
Yeah.
So even with that, it is not enough, of course. I had to head other connects to make sure that I use some of the resources to make sure that I deliver. Because delivering is very important part of the game as well.
Yeah.
Because what we often do as designers, we overpromise and we underdeliver.
Yeah.
Oxosi down in America are starting to stock more of my products, and they want to represent and go big with Umaxhosa this year in New York. Those are people that we give our trust and beliefs that
they'll sell the product.
We have what it takes to be one of the best in Africa.
Mm.
And how do you do it with your brand? I think knowing you personally and seeing your brand all around the world, it's so, besides your clothing being so distinct, it still looks like, when I see the mannequin, whether I'm in New York or seeing it, how it's presented online, it still looks like the way you would do it.
Mm.
So, you know, in allowing all these boutiques and all these, you know, global retailers to carry your brand, how do you still remain so in control? Because I remember seeing one of your stuff at the airport, and I was like, that looks like it was styled by you. As one man, how are you doing all this? Or how do you remain in control of your brand and how it's narrated globally?
Locally, I've had a lot of demand, like from retailers that wanted to stock my products, but I didn't like most of them because of merchandising and product placement. So I said no to a lot of them. Emergence and Luminance are some of the few that I said yes to. Yeah. And I have people within the store that I want to build, that I make sure that I build a personal relationship with them.
Okay. And
chat with them on WhatsApp and explain how I want them to place my product, how to merchandise it, and explain as well the story behind the brand and the quality as well. Because with e-tourists, they are more savvy when it comes to the raw material. They want to know where it's made, how it's made, who made it.
Yeah.
So those are some of the concerns that customers have.
Yeah.
Which I make sure that I communicate to my
Lisa, you had a point right
there. Yeah, I wanted to say, picking up on that, mentioning tourists, because your brand is so global and it's big and the demand is very international because it's at that level.
Mm.
How do you bridge the gap with now remaining a local artist and not being overpriced for local consumers?
Yeah.
And I think I want to add into that. I think, you know, you've also been a pioneer in a sense, because now you challenge international clothing brands where you're like, Umaxhosa also should sell
and
for 10,000
for local, local talent.
Yeah. Local talent. So how have you fought through that, where people are like, ah, I'll spend 10, 15, 20,000 on Dolce & Gabbana, but ah, Umaxhosa, Sali, Booty, you know, I know. And I even remember when we went to a fair together where I bought one of your stuff, and I remember one of the guys being like, eh, I want to buy it, but this guy is expensive. I'm thinking, you're the same guy that I saw buying Louis Vuitton last week.
Mm.
So just talk us through that. Like,
I think communication is one of the most important aspects. I always explain to people why I charge such prices. I feel like I don't have to, but I think for the sake of getting people to understand, they don't have to buy, by the way, because I position my brand as a premium brand that just penetrated into luxury. So people don't need to buy my jerseys. I think people buy them for emotional fulfillment. When they travel overseas, they want to be spotted, be taken pictures of. That's what happened to some of my customers.
I'm actually getting goosebumps. I'm getting such goosebumps because it's so crazy how you're saying that. Because I remember when I was, I'm not flexing, but when I was at New York Fashion Week, because I frequent New York now. when I was in New York, I was staying in Soho, and I'm walking around, and I remember wearing your scarf.
Yeah.
And it's actually so crazy. Latuma, guys, tells you how to wear his brand. So I remember him showing me how to wear his scarf. So I'm wearing his scarf. I'm like, Latuma, be proud. And this man,
the star of the show.
Yeah. So, and this man stops me on the road. He's like, where's this scarf from? Like, my clothes. He's like, oh, cool, cool. And he's like, I'll give you $15,000 to buy that from you. I'm like, why? He's like, no, I am. He's like, he's a buyer from Trussardi. He's like, I'm a buyer from Trussardi, and I've been pitching a certain material, and this is what I need for them to understand.
Yeah.
So I'm like, no, I think you should speak to Latuma. How do I know I'm not selling the guy's concept now? And I even remember, I'm like, here's his Instagram, here's his Twitter. I think you should talk to him, and who knows, there might be a Trussardi / Umaxhosa collaboration.
Yeah.
But it's actually so crazy. You're right when you're saying, like, I didn't sell it not because I didn't want the money, but because I felt so proud.
Yeah.
And I was like, this guy, I was not buying a piece, he's taking my pride. And to make it worse, I'm Xhosa now, and I'm feeling like Xhosa royalty in New York. So you are right, that emotional fulfillment
can't
does,
take it through your crown my, off and dude, give it to somebody else for $15,000.
No, that's not a real thing. So I think that is true.
Yeah.
And how you've built your brand around that. But were you always conscious of that? Because I remember, I mean, the way you positioned your brand, it was very Xhosa, Ukoluka, and the narrative of it has just changed now.
Yeah.
Is it because of that consciousness of being like, actually, this is bigger than just, you know, Amadoda. It's actually, it can be a movement.
Yeah. My aim was to fill in a missing gap because of the fact that I was like globally aware of what's happening in the fashion industry now. I knew and could pinpoint what was missing. A lot of people in our days feel that there's no happiness that is being portrayed with any fashion. And some of the people that see my work, they say, yo, your brand is very happy. It's so
vibrant,
colorful.
Yeah.
It's not for everyone. But anyone that appreciates it would grab it, like Italians wear color. British don't like wearing color. They are modest. Japanese love color. So is those type of niches that I thought that would love and appreciate my work locally. Filmmakers, musicians, graphic designers are some of the niche market that I've penetrated.
Yeah.
And I actually foresee that because I think a culture or African aesthetic was never translated that way, where someone feels like this is traditional, I would wear it, because it's not too traditional in a way that I have to wear
it's got like modern edge.
Yeah, yeah. Leopard skin or something. The pitch was sophisticated to a point where someone can wear it every day.
Yeah. I mean, you are someone who, you know, you are Xhosa. You know, and this brand is inspired, not something that is a far-fetched concept. It's something that's actually personal to you.
Yeah.
And I've seen how you actually wear your brand, not because you've made it, but you live what you sell.
Mm.
So, and we live in a time now where, you know, Africa is the movement. You know, you've seen it all around the world. People are intrigued by Africa.
Mm.
And as a result, we have, I mean, I'm going to be rough the way that I say it, but we have a lot of, you know, creatives who are African now because it suits them. And in the way that they represent Africa is inappropriate. Not inappropriate, but it's fake.
Yeah.
It comes across, as someone who's really African and Xhosa, it come across as, you know, sort of fake. And, you know, as a brand that's been international, you've had to sort of shift that narrative, because when you went international with your brand, there were certain views of how Africa looks.
Mm.
How have you beaten through those? And I mean, I'm not going to mention any names, but you and I know very well that there's a local designer who copies your prints, who insists on copying your prints and your work. And now he's also selling himself as African. And now comes Latuma as well, who's also African, but they always go for you because there's something authentic about that. But how doesn't that... Tell us about that struggle, like having to, you know, change people's narrative of Africa, that an African knit can be $1,000, where when they think of Africa, it's like, oh, but all of you guys are hungry and you wear Ankara prints, and you know, you've had to change the narrative and show Africa is rich and luxe and beautiful. And tell us about that struggle for you.
Yeah, actually for me, I think when you carrying a good quality product, you don't struggle much.
Yeah.
I think it's the narrative that you some people struggle with, you know, because I've seen like local design studios trying the whole African thing, and then they come up with gimmick stories that people overseas often believe. So
yes.
When I get invited, like for instance Yale University or at the British Museum to speak about my work, I make sure that I capture it in the most authentic way, so that people can, it can be believable and authentic as well.
Yeah.
So people often get surprised that there is winter in South Africa, for instance. They don't even know that there is a wool industry, which is the biggest in the continent.
Yeah.
They don't know that 70% of the world's mohair comes from South Africa, Port Elizabeth. So I share some of those facts so that they can have an understanding about South Africa that in often cases is better than the place where they live. Actually, people are living a lifestyle that is modern. So a lot of people were surprised who have never been to Africa. And after sharing that story, they start buying to my product. Like, for instance, I had an experience in Amsterdam 2014.
Yeah.
I got invited to speak at the What Design Can Do conference, and I went there with my sister and I. We decided to take 50 pieces.
You always carry a lot of pieces with you. I remember one of the biggest struggles wanting to buy Latuma's pieces, always be like, nah, I'm traveling to this conference, I'm taking all of them.
Yeah, so we went there, never been to Amsterdam, never knew much about how the Dutch react to African design. And they gave me 30 minutes to speak. Paul Smith spoke there as well, previous day. So got intrigued, actually, to be part of that crowd and actually get enough time to tell the whole story. After I spoke, my sister and I had to set up a table to sell the products, and they formed up a queue, and they bought all of them in euros. That experience for me made me realize, because I had like a personal connection with customers and not like sending products through pop-ups. So it gave me an idea of how people were closed-minded about South Africa and Africa in general. So I thought that there's a lot to change and a lot to actually establish and expand as far as African design is concerned.
Yeah.
Actually, there's a big project which is going to launch recently, which we're doing with the IKEA. IKEA.
Oh wow, the furniture company.
Furniture company.
Where you just build your furniture. Yes,
IKEA is collaborating with the Design Indaba and chose about 14 designers to design a collection for them, which will be launched in 2018. So we went to Sweden at the headquarters. Like, IKEA is massive. They turn over 32 billion euros annually. And getting into that platform with African products, which they never even considered before in the past, since they were established in their 50s. So I think that Africa is not the future. Africa is now, because that transformation in design is like happening now.
Yeah.
People are buying into it now. Nigeria is one of the forerunners of it. Well, when I went to a fashion week here there in October last year, I was super blown away. Like, our level of fashion design, quality, everything is way beyond a level that they've established already in Nigeria.
And what do you think is holding us back in South Africa? I think, you know, generally, I always have to put disclaimers, but generally I struggle to grasp at our South African, you know, design industry. I sit at Fashion Week and I'm like, what is this shit?
Yeah.
You know, not because, you know, I'm being malicious or anything, but I just feel that the standard that we aim for is not high enough.
Yeah.
The stories that we tell are not authentic. I'll see it as, I'm like, this is like, what are you trying to say here? This is not even authentic.
Yeah.
So, you know, what do you think are some of, why are we not at that Nigerian level? You know, why are a lot of designers struggling, and why a lot of designers broke at the moment? Because their stuff is just isn't selling. And the craziest thing is, one of the brands that sell very well for our country is your brand, and the other brand is Sgt. Pepper, which is run by Zach Fenter. He's selling all over the world now. You know, and you guys don't even partake in Fashion Week unless you feel like you have to, or even you didn't show at Fashion Week until you felt like, okay, for PR circumstances I need to do it. Why do you think the South African industry has a disjoint to the international market, or why are we not doing well as Nigeria?
I think we don't have honest voices in fashion locally. When someone sees your collection on runway and is not happy with it or doesn't like the quality, they're not going to write about those negative
They'll write all the nice ones.
They'll write all the nice ones. So people sell their opinions, I think. I personally think they're not honest enough to say that, ish, that quality that you showed Fashion Week wasn't up to standard. Fortunate enough, I have people that tell me personally that, I love what you do, but you must work on this and work on that. Those are people that I appreciate the most, because they take you even
to the next
further
level.
Take you to the next level.
Yeah, and it's something I always say, and I'm like, you know, where I'm at a place now where I'm honest about if I don't like something. And when I say, listen, you know, that's not the right story, or this is actually crap material that you used, and, you know, the clothing is not finished, and people take it personally. I'm like, we're in the business of fashion here. I work in fashion, and my job is to make sure that I feature things on my pages of The Threaded Man of quality and substance. And I think also the designers here live in sort of a lie, because they think they're in New York City and they'll design all these avant-garde pieces and everything, and they forget, well, this is South Africa, number one. You know, and we're driven by culture, we're driven by heritage, we're driven by a story, and they think that they're gonna make people wear meat and we're gonna get it.
and the fact that we, even though we have couture designers, or some who call themselves couture designers, I think they will never be the best in the world, because France has all the resources and the history and the heritage.
And the culture of it, yeah.
The
culture.
We don't have the Kevin Rogers, stop lying. You can't do couture from Durban or wherever you do it from. It's done in France. Like, the French board has to approve you. No one can just be couture.
You can't just be couture.
I see all these brands don't on couture. Stop lying. Fashion students, don't call your brand something couture. It's not real. Yana Mouli had something couture. Stop lying, guys. Like, please, man, be honest. I think that's where it starts, Latuma.
That's where it starts.
An honest boy.
Like, you have to specialize and know your product, and not settle for number two and settle for number one, because the fashion business is a multi-billion-dollar industry, and you have to claim a market share in that revenue and make sure that you build something that will sustain beyond yourself.
Yeah,
that's true.
I think, like, we're going to wrap up pretty soon, but I think just before we wrap up, you know, just summarizing your journey, I think what I said before is, how do you build your brand overseas? One of the things you highlighted, I'm just highlighting for those that are listening, is that you said that you build partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that doesn't just apply to you as someone in design. I think that applies to any entrepreneur. I think build the right connections.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned how you met Henley, and she does merchants a lot and long, and they still stock your product today. I remember in Christmas, they even did like these wooden packages for your brand, you know, to be able to sell.
Go into the right spaces.
Yeah. So go into the right spaces. And then what was the other point you made from there? I think you spoke about also being in control of your brand, you know, working, being selective with who you work with.
Mm.
So you mentioned that a lot of people just send out their clothing.
Mm.
You know, you vet who you work with, and you always trust that they'll carry the brand well and that they become, I remember you even say, I quote, custodians of the brand. And that I think that's important, that you sell to people that genuinely wear your brand.
Yeah.
From Oshozi, I know Kolade very well. And I remember when I went to his studio, he was wearing your knit.
Mm.
You know, it's you, people buy into the product.
Mm.
And I think, you know, another thing is what it sounds like is that you never stop learning.
Mm.
Is that in each environment that you're put in or wherever, you always analyze. And I remember you spoke about Amsterdam, about how that experience changed, you know, the connection you felt going to London and realizing that people don't know as much about Africa, or they don't know the beautiful Africa that you know. They have another image of how it looks.
Yeah.
And so just readapting your brand into those different markets is very important. You know, you can't just go to America and say America's all the same. New York is different from California.
Mm.
And I think that you touched on that understand the environment which you operate in.
Yeah.
And what are your parting words? I mean, this is a podcast. It's going to live for a very long time.
Yeah.
I'm hoping in 20 years people will quote you from what you say here today. So if you had to give out a message to other young creatives, other young designers, and people like me who look up to you, you know, what words do you have to share for the world?
I'd say that people must think more realistic. We're in 2017, going into 2020. We have all that we need, all the resources that we need nowadays. If money is still an excuse, quit now.
Mm.
Quit now, because it's not money that will take you where you need to go to.
Yeah.
It's your passion.
Drive.
It's your resilience, persistence, passion. If you have none of that, you're not gonna go anywhere. And hard work is the ultimate drive that you need to sustain to get wherever you need to want to be.
Wow, that's very powerful, Lisa. Any parting words before we wrap up?
I don't even know. I've been blown away. You sound like such a tenacious gentleman. You've just constantly worked hard and hard every time. So I think work hard. I go with your work hard.
Yeah, I think from my end is that stop using money as an excuse.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the excuses that I used, you know, from being from the Eastern Cape and having this idea of the Thriller Man. I think it was always, oh, I don't have enough money, or, oh, money is an issue. You'll never have the money.
Yeah.
You know, and
never,
I think, and I think, you know, with what's happening right now in the music industry, I mean, I'm not going to mention any names. ambitious. You know, a lot of, you know, young creatives, a lot of rank as young creatives, we sign all these checks because, you know, we don't trust the value value of what we have, because for us it's about the money.
Mm.
And I want to say to young creatives,
don't undervalue
what you have. What you have is more valuable than what you can imagine. You know, look at Mark Zuckerberg with Facebook. He believed, the Facebook we know now, he believed in it from the day he started it, where he sold 1% of it for $1 billion to Microsoft. 1%. At a company that didn't even make a profit at that time. So in that, I say for me, have resilience, believe in your idea, rather go broke with it and starve with it than sell it and undersell it and lose your brand like Jenny Button. Don't be a Jenny Button. No, I'm using real life examples. I'm using real life examples. Don't be Jenny Button. Be like Latuma. Latuma has a brand. He owns it. It's going overseas. Jenny Button has a name that she does not function with.
A lot of names are dropped today.
You know, don't be a John Galliano. Oh, wow. Don't be a John Galliano who doesn't even run their brand.
Thank you. Latuma,
thank you so much.
Thank you. You've been fantastic.
And I'm happy that you got to share more insight. I think I get so annoyed when they interview you. They ask you the same thing. Tell us your story. I think today it was about showing you that you're an entrepreneur. And umaXhosa is an empire that is growing. And I can't wait.
A vibrant, colorful one.
A vibrant, colorful one. And minimalism is not African. Stop it. Buy into color. umaXhosa sells color. And I can't wait to see your stores in New York and across the world. And I wish you nothing but the best. And uXamata is watching over you.
Yeah,
and
umaXhosa
may live forever. I'm Siyabonga Beile, and thank you for tuning into the third installment of The Thread Exchange. Please look out for the podcast. We'll be tuning it everywhere. You can also connect with me on Twitter at Siyabeile, and you can find umaXhosa across all social media networks. Thank you very much.
Goodbye.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
The Thread of Exchange with Siyabeile. Live on Cliff Central.
CliffCentral.com.